Hey, it's Ethan. Before we kick off this episode, I just want to let you know that this show is only possible because of your support. This is the NCPR Spring Fundraiser, one of the few times during the year that we ask you to give to the station to help keep the lights on. Because you enjoy The Howl, show your support with a gift right now at ncpr.org/give. And thanks. All right, here's the show.
Until I learned how to pull the quills out myself, I took her to the animal hospital in Canada because porcupines are nocturnal and you get quilled when the vet's office is closed. And we went to Canada so often the border guards knew me as the porcupine lady.
That was Leslie Russick, live on stage at the 1844 House in Potsdam. And on today's episode, a visit with the porcupine lady. From NCPR and the Adirondack Center for Writing, this is The Howl. True stories, no notes, recorded live on stage in the North Country. I'm Ethan Shanty. Even though I've been a public figure for over a decade, it's still really difficult for me to get up in front of a crowd and talk to people. It doesn't matter if they're friends or family or strangers, all those eyes just freak me out. And it always comes as a shock to people when I tell them that I'm actually kind of shy. They assume, because I've been on the radio since 2010, that I'm an extrovert. But in the last year or so, I've been challenging myself to get outside of my box. So when our station manager, Mitch, asked me if I wanted to tell a story on stage at one of our slams, my gut reaction was, no way. But to my surprise, my mouth said, yeah, sure, I'd love that. Well, I was in deep now because I couldn't just back out. Unless I was throwing up or broken down on the side of the road, I'd better suck it up and tell a good story. So on today's episode, I want to play you that story. It was a big hurdle for me to overcome, and it turns out that I kind of killed it on stage, and I'd be lying if I said I weren't proud of it. In a little bit, we'll hear from Leslie Russick, but to kick off this episode, here's me, live on stage at the 1844 House in Potsdam.
I'm very much a cat person. I always have been. I love cats. Nothing against dogs, but cats are a little bit better. And so when my partner, who is here, Erin, and I moved into our own place, and she finally said, I think we should get a cat. There's this stray cat that's hanging out at Cornell Cooperative Extension. I literally had tears in my eyes because I'd been waiting for us to have a cat together for so long. The tears she'll probably attribute to me being a Pisces. Really, I'm just a big baby. So we got this cat. She was a stray. Her name was Ripley, named, of course, after the badass in the Aliens franchise, Ellen Ripley. And she pretty much hated us at first. It took her 4 months to warm up to us. During that time, she either hid between the washer and the dryer, or she hid on this utility cabinet that we have in our utility room. But eventually, she became the perfect cat. A beautiful cat, a lovely cat. She would scream at Erin in the morning until she got fed. She would scream at me in the afternoon until I let her up on my lap so she could sniff around my laptop. She would scream at night when Erin and I went to bed because she couldn't see us anymore, and that meant that we had disappeared. And love this cat very, very much. And then she disappeared in June. Erin and I did the thing that you're supposed to do, which is put up posters. We talked to all of our neighbors. We called every humane society in the county. We didn't get very far with any of that. We had a couple people reach out to us on Facebook. They said, hey, there's this abandoned house a couple streets over from you, and I'm pretty sure that your cat is hanging out there. So Erin and I, for the next couple of days, just hung out around this abandoned house, calling the cat's name with treats until we realized actually the house wasn't abandoned at all and we were trespassing. Nobody called the cops, which is fortuitous for us. So we hadn't necessarily given up hope. We knew that she was a barn cat. She'd eventually come back around, probably. But we were really devastated. We were really upset. We really loved our cat. We wanted to see her again. We were like, bro, what is your deal? You get all the cuddles and food you want inside. You're just chasing mice outside. Come home. But no, so she's still missing. And then one day, Erin and I are watching The Bear, and she gets a message on Facebook from someone that she doesn't know and that I don't know. And they say, we have your cat. It's not threatening like that, but it's like, we have your cat. And they send us photos, and sure as hell, it is Ripley. It's got the bushy tail, it's got the tiger coating, and the photos are a little bit blurry, but we're like, thank God our cat is here. So we bundle up, you know, we get a towel, we get our little cat carrier, which we know that she hates, and we jump in my truck and we rush over. It's just a couple streets over, and we think we're going to get to go into the house and see this cat and give it treats and confirm that it's our cat. But when we get there, the folks are standing out on their front porch. They have the cat, our cat, Ripley, wrapped in a towel on their shoulder, and it is going nuts because it has hopped up on catnip, and it's shrieking, and it's trying to get away. So we pull up. I'm basically parked sideways on this street, and Aaron gets out of the truck. They just throw the cat at Aaron, basically, and then we get in the truck, and we're like, okay, we just need to get back to the house before this cat pees all over the truck because it's shrieking, it's trying to get out. Again, hopped up on catnip. I don't know if any of you have ever been, but it's a wild thing. So we finally get back to our house. I rush out of the truck, open my front door. Aaron goes in. I go back, lock everything up, come back in the house. Aaron has put the cat down. It looks suspiciously sort of like our cat. But before we can get a good look at it, it bolts. It runs up the stairs. It's all over Aaron's art supplies, which Ripley never does. It's shrieking. It's howling. It runs down the stairs. It's up on the windows, which Ripley never does. And then it's up on the car. It's down on the carpet. It's rubbing its back all over the carpet, which Ripley never does. And so we finally get a good look at this cat, and its eyes are a little bit bigger than Ripley's, and its hair is a lot of bit shorter than Ripley's, and everything about it is a lot of bit different than Ripley's, but we are desperate for our cat. We want our cat back so much that we are Googling, do cats lose their hair in the summer with their long hair? Can their voices get deeper if they've been out for a while? And all of this was totally unnecessary when we finally got down and we lifted up its tail to realize that it was very much a male cat, a well-endowed male cat. So we had already basically fallen in love with this cat all over again, even though it wasn't ours. We named it Bartleby. We thought to ourselves, maybe we'll just keep it. And then we thought, well, it must be a person's cat. This cat is so friendly. It's so lovely. It's so affectionate. It's got to be somebody's missing cat. So we call the Humane Society. Finally, somebody comes and picks it up. And Bartleby, thankfully, has found a new home. Ripley is still missing, but I saw her on the edge of our driveway this morning eating the wet food that we had left out for it. So we're pretty sure when it finally gets cold, she will come in, at which point she will be grounded for life. Thank you.
That was me, live on stage at the 1844 House in Potsdam. And there actually is a happy ending to that story, too. We did get Ripley back 6 months after she went missing. And all it took was a dead bird and a beach towel. But that's a story for another episode. For now, let's hear from Leslie Russick. She's got an animal story that could only have happened on one particular day of the year. Here she is, live on stage at the Howl Story Slam in Potsdam at the 1844 House.
Okay, so there was silence at the other end of the phone. Then after a moment, Leslie, if this was anyone else but you, I wouldn't believe you. So at the time, I had a Siberian husky named Luna, all white, tall, lanky, looked a lot like an Arctic wolf, except she had blue eyes instead of yellow eyes. She acted a lot like an Arctic wolf, too. She'd take off at night. She could get out of the fence. No matter what we did, she got out of the fence. She'd come back with a deer leg or two, maybe a rabbit, half a rabbit. But her bad habit was porcupines. So ultimately, she got quilled about 23 times, give or take a few. Yeah, right. So until I learned how to pull the quills out myself, I took her to the animal hospital in Canada because porcupines are nocturnal and you get quilled when the vet's office is closed. And we went to Canada so often, the border guards knew me as the porcupine lady. And sometimes the Canadian border guard would tell the American border guard who was waiting for me. So, but I knew some dog sledding friends, and it's like, you guys don't go to the vet when your sled dogs, you know, you're out 30 miles from anything. What do? Well, it turns out sled dogs or dog sledders, they grab them by the harness, hang them in a tree, because then they can't fight, but they don't have any traction for their feet. And they just pull up the quills out with pliers. And it hurts, but so does having a nose full of porcupine quills for a drive to the vet. So it kind of balances out. Well, I couldn't do that with Luna because she was about 70 pounds and really powerful. But what I would do is I would tackle her, roll her over so her feet were up in the air so she couldn't get traction on anything. And I'd reach around with my trusty pliers, which I now carried on every dog walk, right, and pulled the quills out. This happened a lot of times. So at work, they were kind of used to me having these adventures, things that were going on. So I usually got about 1 minute's notice when Luna found and cornered a porcupine. She'd bark. Normally, she never barked. Really quiet dog. But when she had a porcupine quilt, and I figured I had about 1 or 2 minutes to get to her before she got a faceful. So when I heard the barking, I knew it was urgent. And so I ran. I finally get to her. So the good news, she did not have a faceful of porcupine quills. Bad news, she was well into a full assault on a full-grown beaver. Porcupine quills are nothing to beaver teeth, right? So Luna was a good hunter. She was smart. She was going around behind the beaver, grabbing it by the tail, trying to shake it. And the beaver would spin around and lunge at her, and she would jump back and run around the back of the beaver and grab it and shake it. And this had been going on for a couple of minutes. The beaver was pissed, really pissed. And I didn't blame the beaver, really. So I get there, and I'm trying to get my dog because I'm really worried about these beaver teeth, right? And so I'm trying to get my dog. My dog's trying to stay away from me, which she was really good at. And she was trying to get behind the beaver to grab him by the butt. And now the beaver has two assailants, right? Me and Luna. And it didn't take the beaver long to figure out who was the weaker link in this, right? So the beaver lunges at me and bites me. My jeans are ripped. I've got blood going down my leg. Not a good day, right? So I do finally get Luna. We get into the car, look at my leg, and it's not a deep bite. That's fine. But I did just get bitten by a beaver. So I'm like, okay, let's go to the hospital and see if I need a rabies shot. So I get to the emergency room, and they're like, did you catch the beaver? No. They said, well, then how do we know if it has rabies? I'm like, I don't know. And they're like, oh, well, then you're going to have to get rabies shots. You know, this series of like 5 really painful shots. It's like, okay, I guess so. But first we have to get permission from public health because public health actually owns the rabies vaccine and the hospital just injects it, right? So then they call the public health and I'm waiting for public health. And of course they want to know if I have the beaver, which I don't have the beaver. And then I realize I'm running late for work. So I call the office, right, and I explain that I'm in the emergency room waiting for public health to release the rabies vaccine because I've been bitten by a beaver. And there's silence at the other end of the line. Leslie, if this was anyone else, I wouldn't believe you. You know it's April Fool's Day.
That was Leslie Russick, live on stage at the Howl Story Slam at 1844 House in Potsdam from late 2023. That's it for this edition of the Howl Podcast. We've only got one more left, but we will be back for another season, I promise. The Howl is written, produced, and edited by me. I'm Ethan Chanty. Editorial supervision by David Summerstein, and special guest editor on this episode was Emily Russell. Doyle Dean is our production manager. Bill Hanel is our digital services director, and Caitlin Kelly handles our social media. For more stories and to find out when we're going to be on stage in your town, visit ncpr.org/howl. By the way, our theme music is by Famous Letter Writer of Plattsburgh. You can find out more about them on our website. By the way, I want to ask you one last time to support this show with a gift right now. It's NCPR's spring fundraiser. Show your support with a gift right now at ncpr.org/give. And thanks. Coming up next week, it's the season finale of the Howl Podcast.
So there I was in the jelly, and I'm just slapping and grabbing and kneeing and clawing, and you're hitting the concrete floor, and you're splashing waves of green ooze into the crowd. And there wasn't an empty seat. There wasn't a place to stand. The whole town had come out for a show.
For North Country Public Radio, I'm Ethan Chanty. This is NCPR.